And welcome to the Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country. Or perhaps you found us on the podcast, which can be found anywhere podcasts can be found, including now with the Harbinger Media Network. We are back with a special radio documentary with Pantayo, who are playing our tune-in event next Thursday, May 2nd. Please come and join us at Lula Lounge. We are also joined by Alex Wolliver, our music journalist in residence. And so just by way of introduction, perhaps we can do a quick round of introductions so folks can match a name to a voice. Maybe starting with you, Kat.
Hi, my name is Kat, and I play electronic drum pads with the spirit of a gong in it. So we sampled the gong and put it in a sample pad, and I also do some vocals.
Hello, I'm Katrin. I play the kulintang, and I also do some vocals.
Hello, it's very lovely to meet you, Stefan, and Alex for the first time ever. It's really great. So thank you for having us. My name is Michelle, and I play the agong, and I do some vocals at Pantayo. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Irene. I play keys, guitar, and bass for Pantayo.
And I'm Alex. I have nothing. I'm not in the band, but I'm very happy to be here talking with you.
I was also going to add, we have one more member who is not able to join us at the moment, and her name is Jo. She is on the Saronai and also does some vocals.
Amazing. Thanks so much. And I believe Joe will be joining us later in this chat. So you will hear from Joe. Don't worry, listeners. We will get that. Thank you all so much. And as a sort of second wave of introduction, let's take it back to the beginning. How did you all meet and how did the idea of forming a band come about?
I can say a little bit about how the band met. Well, so as it was 2011, I met a majority of Pantayo members now, and it was during a fundraiser. And after that fundraiser, we were like, hey, let's do a post-mortem of the fundraiser. And so we did, and we met at this like Chinese restaurant at Old Chinatown. And so when we were there, we were chatting, eating Chinese food, and we were like, someone mentioned learning how to play the kulintang, and a bunch of people said yes. So we decided, okay, so we'll meet on this day and then we'll learn about the kulintang together. So a bunch of people signed up, and then the day came and I think a few people showed up. And then this is, I guess, like the most latest iteration of that workshop, like the latest lineup of that workshop group. So here we are now, over 10 years later, still workshopping, still playing kulintang, and yeah.
I'd like to also add that, yeah, that Michelle was saying earlier that this is the current iteration of the band. But I think it was around 2015, 2016 was also like a milestone for Pantayo, because that's when we decided to become a band that records our own music. And so I think the decision to make kulintang our own and to draw from our experiences and create music that, you know, isn't traditional and it's more speaking to our experiences as diasporic people, it happened around that time.
Awesome. And you both mentioned the name of this instrument. Can you give us a bit of backstory as to the instrument itself and in these gongs that you play?
So the kulintang is named after the instrument and the ensemble that it forms. The kulintang is a set of pot gongs going from low pitch to high pitch. And the set that we play has 8 gongs in it. However, there's other versions of that because there's other tribes who use kulintang as well. Tribes in the southern part of the Philippines called Mindanao. And the tradition that we follow and we borrow from is specifically from the Magandanaon tribe. This is because of various teachings that were done in person and also through sheet music that we found out later on was done by one of our gurus, one of our teachers, and her name is Guru Agamayo Putokan, who is from the UP, University of the Philippines School of Ethnomusicology. So what she did was at that time very groundbreaking because it was essentially tabs for Kulintang so that students from Manila, from the northern part of the Philippines, who don't know much about Kulintang music because it's not part of the culture up there, that's the way that she devised to teach it when she was starting out at University of the Philippines. And so in that process, through different teachers, through different friends, we even through the internet, at that time we were able to Google hashtag Kulintang, but not a whole lot showed up. So at that time, there were different sources of this material. And then as time passed by, we just found out that it was actually Guru Agamayo who was the source of these things. Now, concurrent to that timeline was getting some teachings from another teacher who's called Guru Danny Calanduyan from the Bay Area in San Francisco in the U.S., and his work is different because he was able to migrate into the Turtle Island, and he was able to form essentially a group. And the group that he formed there is still there right now, and it exists as his legacy. And so these different versions of Kulintang, the Kulintang that we are learning from, the one that we learned at the beginning of our journey and we're still doing right now, it just popped up in different timelines. So it's really cool to see the different evolution, the different contributions of folks who practice Kulintang. But essentially, if you narrow it down, it's passed on from generation to generation. It's oral tradition. But now we have that too with the help of technology. And as diasporic people, we also have our own sprinklings of our influences added to it, which enriches, I think, the evolution of the Kulintang sound.
Yeah, that's really a nice thought. You know, I play guitar and I like the sound of guitar, but it wasn't like a connection to my ancestors or my, you know, my homeland or anything like that. So do you think that what drew you to the instrument is kind of musical based, or do you think it's kind of more of a cultural thing, or maybe it's a combination of both?
I could speak for myself when I say that it's a mixture of both. I think that initially it was a way to connect with Filipino culture and with other Filipinos in Toronto. It's really cool that I wouldn't necessarily, you know, be doing this work with Pantayo if I didn't meet the members of Pantayo, and also at the same time learn about Kulintang music and what that means for Filipinos outside of the Philippines and also in the Philippines. And so that was like the hook for me. But also when we started playing the gongs and we started playing for different audiences, it's also the uniqueness of the sound of the gongs that was really interesting, because the sound of bells or chimes or gongs, you can't, at least the set that we use, most of them don't fall into one neat key or like note. And so that makes it interesting in terms of creating work and communicating with each other, and also communicating with other people that we work with when we want to basically realize an idea into a song or into a performance or something like that.
Awesome.
To bring things, you know, more directly to this project, when I was, you know, I've been listening to your music, I've been reading your social posts and your websites and things and your interviews, and I've seen you use the term punk when describing your band. And I was just curious what the term punk means to you, you know, when it comes to music and your project.
I think punk for us means like taking things out of the normal context, quote unquote. If we think about Kulintang, the original purpose of the instrument and the music is for outside and to bring community together. It's used for rituals and weddings and ordinary days where you just want to relax after a long day of work. And for us, some aspects of that are practiced in Pantayo, but for the most part, we play indoors and we play for ourselves. And by doing so, we kind of draw in the community and the audience that we resonate with and they resonate with us. And so that's one aspect of punk. And then another aspect in my head is that when we think about punk, like the ethos, it's like stirring up and saying what you want to say and all of those different combinations. So yeah, so I think the term gong punk came out of those ideas. Anybody else want to add?
Yeah.
I'm just a bunch of rock chicks.
was gonna say, I feel like there's with Pantayo's roots, there's definitely like a DIY aspect, which I think is also a signature or characteristic of punk. I still feel like we have DIY elements. We played a show in Montreal in February, and I think Katrin said to the audience, "We are playing pop songs with punk vibes." And I thought that was pretty accurate.
As it has context, I think there was also some crowd disruption at that time. And if you've been to a punk show, punk fans are really helpful towards each other, even though they lose their and rock out. So in that process, I was thinking of, help your friend there, help your neighbor, be nice, rock out, punch the clouds, but don't punch each other's faces. So I think that's also the attitude that we'd like to bring in when we play. Once one person's joy does not have to steal from another person's joy. So in that context, I would say like thinking community level is also important. And these are the values that we like to nourish, we like to nurture.
Amazing. It's so funny to hear you say that, 'cause when I've been trying to describe your music, I sort of start with the gong punks as you describe it, but then I do end up sort of getting to, but also it's dancey, it's fun, it's poppy. There's an element of, I was gonna say joy, and but I think that implies that punk can't be joyful, which I think would get me in trouble with punks. So I'm sorry, punks, I don't mean that. But with that said, I am curious, because you're bringing in all these different elements, what is your songwriting process? We'll get into individual songs later, but I'm curious how you sort of navigate the songwriting process.
I think it's different for each song, which is cliche. But I think the inspiration for each song varies depending on who brings the idea forward and also how we wanna be collaborative on each song. So yeah, I think for songs that have let's say Michelle as the person who starts off the idea, she usually has the structure in mind already and then brings it to us and then we workshop it together. And then there are also songs that say Irene and Katrin would collaborate together and then that became another song. So yeah, so I think that it varies.
We used to have a formula with our first record. We would sit down and study traditional pieces, the same tabs that I was talking about earlier. We would study those pieces, and then what we would have done was, since Kulintang music is repetitive and it's very drony, very rhythmic, we add drums, we add bass. And in the form of the Kulintang ensemble, that meant dahagong. And there's this instrument that we do not play on stage, which is called the dabakan, which is essentially the drum of the ensemble. So in that process, we were building on a Kulintang line, but then we rework a lot of these traditional pieces, and that's where our influences come in. So when we have reworked the songs to have, you know, part one is like a guitar riff, part two is a kulintang riff, and then it's gonna be like call and response for both instruments. And then you're gonna have a bridge with, let's say, vocals. So that's how we've kind of, that's how we did our process afterwards. And then when we didn't stick with any one formula, that's when it kind of opened up a little bit with how songs are brought forth and how they're composed and how they're made to have the different layers that we like to have.
Yeah, I remember one of our earliest songs that we wrote together was basically a traditional kulintang piece, and naturally we thought of adding a kick drum to it. And then when we were thinking about the movement of the song from one section to another, we were thinking, oh, maybe we can add synths. And then so we added that, and then that kind of opened up a lot of options for us in terms of how we create together. We also, what another thing that influences the process is, you know, if we have a collaborator, like for example, if we think about our past two albums, both were produced by Alaska B. And I remember coming up with an idea and then kind of presenting it to her. And I'd be like, hey, I have this idea. Can you make a part that sounds like this? And then I would kind of sing it. And then she would be clicking. And then after like 10 minutes or so, she would be like this. Sometimes it's faster. So then that also affects the process of how we create a song, which is really cool because that makes it really interesting and not boring and not formulaic.
Yeah, and going along that lines, your last album, Ang Pag Daloy, in English, I think the translation is The Flow. So can you speak on why you chose that album title and what it means to you?
I've never said this before, and this is the first time that. So I think it was the last day of recording, and we didn't have the chance to really reflect on what we wanted to call the album because we've been kind of working for months and just writing and then recording and all that stuff. And so we were sitting at Alaska's living room floor, and then we were like tossing some like words, and then Kat was talking about like how it feels, and then like I don't remember who, I'm pretty sure it was Kat, myself, and might have been a dog. It might have been Alaska's dog named Max. And so we were sitting down, and then Kat said something about like going with the flow, flowing, and then Pagdaloy, and then I think my contribution was ang. Because we thought it sounded cooler if it's ang Pagdaloy. And then we're like, yes, that's it. This is what the title is going to be. And then I think that day we also made the logo for that same moment. Yeah, we made the album logo cover thing. Oh, I remember now. We had to come up with a title because we needed to press our vinyl.
Yeah, that was it.
That was the real reason. Yes. Okay, it's all coming back. But yes, that's what happened. But it was very well thought of.
Clearly. I mean, I love your contribution of Ong. I think you're right. I think that was the last touch that was needed. So we're going to go to a music break, and we're going to hear one of the songs from this album. This is going to be Masangguanan from Ang Pagdaloy. Take it away. And welcome back to the Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country, or maybe find us on the podcast, which can be found anywhere podcasts can be found. If you're just joining us, my name is Stefan Hostetter, and we are here with a special radio documentary with Pantayo, who are playing our tune-in show, which is on May 2nd at Lulu Lounge in less than a week. Go get tickets and join us. It'll be an amazing show. You've just heard the music that they are capable of, and I'm certain it is extra fun live. And during the music break, we are also joined by the fifth member. So, Joe, if you could quickly introduce yourself and the instrument you play, that would be amazing.
Lovely. Hi. Yes, I'm Joe. I play the Saranai and vocals.
Amazing. Welcome, and thank you so much.
Thanks.
So let's dive into that song that we just heard, Misangonan. And it is an instrumental track. And we're curious how you decide whether a song is going to be instrumentals or vocals. What makes you decide that?
It depends on the vibe of a song. If I could share a memory, we had a song that started out with lyrics and then we overlaid some instruments on it. And then it actually made it to the demo stage for another purpose. But then when we started recording for the album, Ang Pagdaloy, the vocals and the words didn't seem to sit well with the song. So we totally scrapped it. And I don't have a direct answer for you about what's the answer for having lyrics to a song or vocals to a song, other than it's the vibe. But for Masangwanan particularly, we came in for this idea with the thought of what would Kulintang sound like in the future. And that's what literally the word means. Masangwanan is an Ilocano term. Ilocano is a language from the northern part of the Philippines who does not have Kulintang as part of their culture. Ilocano is a language that my grandmother on my mom's side spoke. And so in doing that, I was thinking of how can thoughts and influences and culture from my past bring me forward to the future. What would gongs sound like in the future when gongs are illegal? But when it came to that idea of, you know, creating a dance track, we wanted everyone to literally sample the song, shake their butts on the dance floor, just move with it, and I think be production heavy. I think that those were the goals of the song. And when I do listen to it, and I listen to it very often because it's one of my favorite, when I do listen to it, I end up doing all those things. So I think that's a check in my books where I was able to accomplish what I set out to do with the help of a few friends and some other instruments.
Yeah, and then I think we can contrast that with lyrical songs where there are ideas that were brought to the group from different members, like the song Mali that was written by Irene. So Irene had already worked on it and brought it to the group to be workshopped. And then we reimagined it as a group piece. I'm actually interested to know, Irene, what your vision was for the song when you brought it to the band, and did we accomplish it?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that for Pantayo. It was a song that I wrote when we were in the album writing process, and with it having a Tagalog word as the title, it just seemed to made sense for Pantayo to have it. And I think with the interludes in that song, it left room for gongs naturally. So I just sort of brought it to the table and just Pantayoized it by just asking Pantayo to the other four to add to it.
That's great. And I've read that queer nightclubs were important to bringing you together as a group. Can you take me through what it is about club culture and specifically queer club culture that resonates with you?
I think we all enjoy a social night out, and we obviously, or maybe it's not obvious, but we like music of different genres. And one thing that we really like doing when also when we're on tour and also in Toronto is to go to like after parties or like club events or wherever there's a queer event that's nearby or after we play. Interestingly enough, I think, actually, no, hang on. I'm trying to remember. It's usually like maybe Irene or Joe or Michelle that has like an idea of what else is going on when after we play. And then we would survey everybody and be like, okay, who wants to go to this event? And then most of the time it's Joe, Irene, and sometimes myself. And then our last show in Montreal, there was, I think, a nightcap. Everybody wanted to go out after we played. And then I was very tired. So when everybody met to leave to go to that event, I was already in my pajamas. And then I said that, I'm sorry I couldn't join you guys, but I will be there dancing in spirit. But yeah, I think the idea behind queer events and how we have like an affinity to them, it's because you feel safe when you're on the dance floor. You don't feel like, you know, someone's just gonna do a disrespectful thing to you. And most of the time, the music is really banging. So it's a win-win-win, I think.
Awesome. And so the first single from the same album is called One More Latch. And we're curious why you chose that as your single for the album. Was there a reason? Did you feel a pressure to have it be, the single be sound a certain way, or was it just the song that really felt like it, the single?
I think we also we really value Alaska B's input, and Alaska is one of the person that suggested that it could be a single. And also, we also talked about perhaps maybe doing like something more like upbeat for a single and kind of like something fun. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. It just Yeah, and I think maybe we also already had like some music video ideas for it that might have been also a reason why.
Michelle, do you want to talk about the process of writing One More Latch? Or like, why is it called One More Latch?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is the first time we're sharing this information with everyone.
We're getting so many scoops. It's amazing.
know. So originally it was inspired by like the cadence of the song and like the way that it's was originally supposed to be like, I guess, like the vibe of it was inspired by Sam Smith and George Michael. And it was supposed to be like this very sexy like sound and just really vibey song. And I think it still turned out to be like vibey and sexy and less dramatic. I think originally like it was more dramatic, but it's great the way that it turned out. Not as super dramatic. So it became more of like a little bit more dancey and fun. So yeah.
And if I could add to that, if you notice, the song is made up of vocals and rhythmic instruments. I don't think we had any melodic instruments in there, correct? So in that way, we are again releasing a single, and it's totally punk to just do that because that's supposed to be the lead for your entire record, and it's supposed to be Do people still use calling cards? Well, how do I say that? Like, it's your app for your particular for your album. And so we thought, why not? It's a cool song, it's a cool concept, and the resonance of the gongs at the very beginning is, for me at that time, was already captivating enough already. So if this would be all right, then let's go with it. And then I think we bounced it off of each other. We bounced it off of Alaska, bounced it off of our record label, and people were excited about it. So we're glad that people are still getting excited about it too. Or new listeners, people who haven't heard of us, and then we're just introduced by the with a song through the music video or through the different channels that we tried to promote the record. So it's an interesting mix when people mention that song because that as their favorite, when they mention it as their favorite, because it was also uneasy for us to send it out because it's not your typical pop song. It's not your typical single off of a record.
Actually, I think this may be like the openly sexy song that we like made. And we wanted to like be like really flirty and thriving. And so, yeah, it's like, I guess this album, we wanted to be more, I guess, open and kind of embrace that side of ourselves and be more flirty and more sexy and just, I guess, express the vibes of that without trying to be like, hey, everyone, this is. And yeah, there's also a music video to this song, by the way, which I mentioned earlier. And it's such an awesome music video, which was directed by Trisha Haggouridis. And we were fortunate enough to be styled by Kathleen Kalika, who is amazing. We work with the both of them in the past. I think we've worked on two other music videos. I think we only work with the same people. We only work with the same producer. We only work with the same director, and we only work with the same stylist. But not because we don't want to work with other people. We just love working with these folks so much. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Watch the music video. It's really cool.
Amazing. I will at the very end of this interview, you'll find out where you can watch it. But I'm sure if you Google Pantayo, you'll also find that music video. I want to get to one more song before we get to another music break, which is, I think, maybe my favorite song of yours, but also maybe that might be biased because I also think it was the first song of yours I heard, because I was like, this is the first time I've told you this, I think, which is that the song, I believe, was the song that Alex, about 2 or 2.5 years ago, sent me after we asked you if we could play it on our show, because it was the middle of the pandemic. We were sort of looking to play new music. And so I had asked Alex to sort of reach out to bands that he had liked and heard some new songs and to share it with. And so I think that's actually how I originally was introduced to your work, was through They Lie or 3 V's in a row. And it definitely has successfully gained some a broader audience and in some traction. And I'm curious if you could talk about the chorus, which is the chorus exactly is they lie, they don't ever tell the truth. No, they never tell the truth because it don't look good. And so I'm curious if you could talk about why, what you're thinking about when you wrote those lines and the song in general.
I think it's a universal experience of being lied to, you know? And like, I think deceit looks like in many ways, it's like, okay, there's intimate like relationships and friendships, like, yeah, you're telling the lie. But then there's also just like these false promises of like even thinking about in larger contexts of like colonization, this idea of a promised land, of a better land. Like, there's so many ways you could interpret that. Also, just what a good sounding line.
Yeah, I think that was definitely our way of expressing our dislike and disgust and all the like weird feelings that come with being a human being. And and things that are not going right in this world. We might create this world for Pantayo where, our connections, our friendships are speaking to how we want to be treated by other people. And unfortunately, outside of that, the world is, full of shitty things and people and colonizers and corporations and countries like Israel that do a lot of things like genocide. And so that's not a funny thing, but, how do we cope as artists? How do we cope as people in this world apart from supporting the work of folks that are, in the front lines? We do that also by creating work that can kind of clap back at those people in the way that we know how. I could speak to so many different things that we can lend our music to, the causes that we believe in. And so, yeah, I think that to be able to express this kind of emotion in a song is really special. It's like something that still amazes me if I see it and I witness it, that's done by another artist as well. And yeah, Joe was right that, it's a pretty universal experience.
For sure. And what a perfect segue into our last section that will be talking about the role of art in social change. But before we do, we're all going to hear this universal experience. So this is They Lie by Pantayo. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And welcome back to the Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps on one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country. Or perhaps you found us on the podcast, which can be found anywhere podcasts can be found. If you're just joining us, we are here with our special radio documentary with Puntayo, who are playing our tune-in show on May 2nd at Lulu Lounge. Please come join us. You can hear the amazing song you just heard. Likely, hopefully, I can't reveal the set list because I don't know what it is, but maybe, hopefully, we'll hear that song. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about how music can speak to broader social issues and the ways in which we can use music to sort of have that conversation. And so I'm curious, what do you think about music's ability to bring about social or political change?
I think that it's a wonderful tool. It's so, like, to have a platform like Puntayo, it's so great because there's things that, you know, your safety could be compromised if you just talk about it openly and whenever you want to. So using music to talk about that is so great. And it's also like a way to process how you're feeling about something and just kind of like really thinking about it in a more broader way. So we have a few songs that mean a lot in that sense, and like specifically. And so yeah, it's really important, and it matters to us that we get to write music like that because, yeah, we have this, like, we're a band because it's a form of resistance, right? Essentially, because in our other life where we just, when we go to work and then when when we respond to emails and respond to our bosses, like, that's not really, like, it's not it. And so having this, like, other life where we're a band and we get to write about music like that, it's great. It's almost therapeutic.
And yeah, I do think that music can accompany a message strongly, whether it goes for you or against you. And this is not the first that we're talking about this, but there was that news item about Sinead O'Connor's song "Nothing Compares to You" being like Sinead O'Connor's estate is requesting and demanding that Trump stops to use that in his campaign because it just doesn't align with what Sinead stood for when she was around. And so, like, music with the message is hard to produce and hard to come by in a sea of, like, really not so political messages in a song, which is fine because a song can just serve its own purpose. But I think for folks like us who have different sides to us, the side that wants to be sexy and that's portrayed in One More Latch, the sound that, you know, is wronged and just wants to stand up to the lies, that's They Lie, and the side that wants to imagine what the future looks like, that's Masangwanan. And there's also observation of, like, consumerist capitalist culture that is adding to the detriment of the people and the environment, and that's reflected in the song Kaingin. And so I think the different aspects of ourselves, we can't help but produce that as well in our music. Our bodies, our thoughts, our words are always going to be political. I think of my body as always political. I am very mindful of the space I take up, the voice that I take up, the message that I send out, whether it's through Puntayo or my day job. And there's something to be said about using your voice and using the knowledge that you have in disseminating information to other humans who can understand you, or to also sway the minds of humans who might not necessarily agree with you at the moment, but you can have the power of influencing. And so with a platform like Puntayo, no matter how big or small, I think it's important for us on our live sets and also on our workshops when we're given the chance to talk about our practices within the band with like teaching the Kulintang tradition as well. So whether it's either of those two avenues, it's important to say where we're coming from and what ideas we have behind all of that. So it would be great to back the political campaign of a certain politician, only if it lines up with our values. But I think other musicians are also around to offer that up for that purpose. And I think it's also a commentary of how other people are thinking it within our bubble. And it's also important to express it out into the world through the format of a song, to just for it to stay out there in the ether and exist.
I also think about, like, when I think about art for social change, it could also mean the experiences that we have reflected in a song, even though the song is so mundane and the song is a love song, because that speaks to our experiences, you know, who we are. We're visibly brown. We are queer. We're women. And to be reflected in a song, when people are inspired by or resonate with the songs that we play, I think that's an instant connection, and that brings about a shift in the social consciousness of people. And so it doesn't have to be an outright political song for it to contribute to social change, because in as much as we bring our own experiences and tell people, hey, this is what a Filipino queer group sound like, and this is the thoughts that are, these are the thoughts that are in their heads, then we could also learn about other people when they do the same. So yeah, I think it's that opportunity that we're so lucky to have when we create together as Pantayo.
Amazing. Anyone else?
Actually, I wanted to add that we're talking, like, a lot of them maybe we talk about are in the context of being here in Canada, but if you look at our group also, and you bring us in a context that's within Philippines, we also don't look like what, you know, music artists would look like there. So, but it's more complex to talk about it. That would be like something that's going to be another episode of this radio show. But yeah, it's if we're going to bring this band and, you know, just create a context within, if we were in the Philippines, it would also mean something different.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's so interesting how quickly we can be sort of sucked into our own context's way of understanding something. And yet something can be different in so many different cultures and actually have different meanings in different cultures because of how, just because of your positionality within it. It's amazing how that can shift. I want to make sure that we get to asking you how folks can follow your work. So how can folks follow your work?
We are quite active on socials, so you can follow us on Instagram, Pantayo Music. We're also on Facebook, and especially check us out on Bandcamp. I get music there, pantayo.bandcamp.com. Yeah, those would be the three best ways. Check us out.
Amazing. And so it's our tradition on this show to give our guests the last word of the show. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a readout, and then I'm going to throw back to you for whatever you want to leave our listeners with. It can be one of you, it can be all of you, however you like. But before I do that, thank you all so much. This has been Pantayo, who are playing Tune In on May 2nd at Lulu Lounge. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you, Alex, for your help with all the work to get the questions and everything else in order and joining us today. And yeah, any last thoughts?
No thoughts, just vibes.
Just vibes.
Taste you, if you let me take you, baby. Cyborg Goddess is a podcast where we examine various technologies from a feminist intersectional lens because we believe that feminist theory has a lot to teach us about the technologies we use every day.
It's gone too far is another one I've heard, right? Feminism's gone too far. It's dangerous.
Have we gone too far? Like, no, it's not.
It's not too far, listeners.
We say no.
Feminist tech research hasn't gone too far. In fact, we're just getting started. In this podcast, we'll explore the origins, present-day uses, and consequences of a variety of technologies that you may never have considered before.
And interestingly, what many people might not realize about the history of dating apps is that apps, as we know them today, were actually first developed by and catered to queer men.
Okay.
So join me, Jennifer Jill Fellows, as I explore what an intersectional feminist lens can teach me about the technologies we use every single day, and about our sometimes paradoxical relationships with these tools and devices.
So before I answer your question, though, let me ask you one quick question, Jill. Do you trust your smartphone?
No.
We aren't technophobes here, but things will get complicated. But who's afraid of a little complication?
So can you tell me what drew you to doing this research on birth control, baby bottles, and bikes?
It was a rebellion.
Rebellion. Okay, let's hear it.
Cyborg Goddess releases episodes 6 times a year, so we hope you'll catch the next one. Until then, everybody. Bye. It's not easy.